Hello, everyone, and welcome to Employment Matters, a podcast brought to you by the Employment Law Alliance, the world's largest network of labor and employment lawyers from the best law firms around the globe. I'm your host, Tara Stingley, a partner with Klein Williams in Omaha, Nebraska. On the program, we span the globe with updates on critical issues from ELA members in each region. Today, we're excited to add to our new series on labor law to discuss protected activity under the National Labor Relations Act in the United States. Joining us on the program is Francine Esposito, a partner with Day Pitney LLP. Francine, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Tara. It's good to be here.
It's great to have you here. Now, as I understand, there has been a lot of activity at the National Labor Relations Board, or NLRB for short, this last year.
Yes, definitely. And on a number of topics. But I wanted to educate employers in particular on employees' protected concerted activity under the National Labor Relations Act, or NLRA for short, since it affects not only employers that deal with unions, but also those that are union-free. And very often, union-free employers don't realize that labor law applies to them as well.
And that's an excellent place to start. And given the implications and the scope of the NLRA, can you walk us through what is protected activity under the NLRA?
Sure. Under Section 7 of the NLRA, employees have the right not only to engage in typically what's known as union activity, like joining a union or bargaining collectively, but also to engage in what's called other concerted activity for the purpose of mutual aid or protection. And those are legal terms, but in more layman's terms, employees have the right to band together for their collective good or advocate on behalf of other employees relating to their terms and conditions of employment. And this can occur without any union at all, and in the context of various types of employee complaints.
And those are some complicated terms that not all employers may be familiar with. Can you walk us through some examples of protected activity?
Sure. Well, the term concerted is important to understand. If an employee is merely making what's called an individual gripe, complaining about an issue that affects only them, that's not normally considered concerted, and therefore is not protected by the NLRA. Concerted is when employees band together or speak on behalf of others, for instance. So if an individual employee complains about safety or other terms and conditions of employment on behalf of other employees, or as a continuation of discussions at group meetings, that very well may be protected. An employer would not legally be able to take any adverse employment action against that employee.
Now, obviously, we have the terms of the NLRA that are set forth, but has the NLRB itself recently ruled on this issue to give any further guidance to employers?
Yes, actually, a lot of rulings within the last year. Our listeners may be aware, unlike other areas of employment law, that the interpretation of the NLRA changes with the composition of the National Labor Relations Board. And the members of the NLRB are appointed based on the political party of the presidential administration that's in power at the time. And interpretations tend to be more employer-friendly with Republican presidents and more labor-friendly with Democratic presidents. Precedent is often overturned when there's changes in administration, as is true with the three cases decided in the last year that I'm going to be talking about. And these cases will likely result in more employee conduct actually being found to be protected. And it's important for employers to be aware of the current law because the consequences of discharging an employee for engaging in protected concerted activity are more costly than ever, given enhanced remedies that are now available for violations of the NLRA.
And this pendulum swing that you just walked us through, I think, is incredibly important for employers to be aware of. So with that in mind, can you walk us through, maybe in a little bit greater detail, some of the NLRB's recent rulings on this issue?
Sure. So there's three cases. The first one is Miller Plastic Products. And that case stands for the proposition that the NLRB will use a very broad, what's called totality of the circumstances test to determine whether conduct is concerted. So the facts are somewhat relevant. In that case, an employee was discharged after he was voicing various concerns about the employer's COVID-19 policy, and he was actually encouraging others to do the same. Despite the fact that this conduct was clearly protected concerted activity under every traditional definition of the law, the board actually took the opportunity to overrule a prior case called Allstate Maintenance. And that case set forth a very narrow 5-factor test to determine whether an employee was actually seeking to initiate, induce, or prepare for group action what the former board had considered to be concerted activity. The current totality of the circumstances test, though, requires a case-by-case analysis of the specific facts, and unfortunately doesn't provide employers, especially those not overly familiar with the concept of protected concerted activity, with guidance for their response to employee conduct. The second case, American Federation of Children, stands for the proposition that employee advocacy on behalf of others who are not employees is protected when it can benefit employees. So when I talked about protected concerted activity, we talked about employees banding together for their collective good, but it's more than that, as this case shows. In this case, an employee was discharged after advocating and encouraging others to advocate for the rehire of an employee who had lost her authorization to work in the United States and was in the process of getting it back. This employee who was advocating for the employee who was no longer there also called the manager racist for not wanting to do so. Finding that the employer violated the NLRA, the board reversed its decision in a case called Amnesty International. In Amnesty International, the board ruled that advocating for non-employee interns to be paid was not protected activity since it was not for mutual aid or protection of actual employees. The board explained in this new case, American Federation for Children, that standing in solidarity can be a protected act despite the lack of employment status of the individuals that employees are standing with. The relevant question now is whether employees can reasonably expect that whoever they're supporting will provide future reciprocal support for them. This, for instance, can also potentially include job applicants, independent contractors, and other people who are technically not currently employees. The third case, which is probably the one most concerning to employers, is called Lion Elastomers. And that case stands for the proposition that employees must be given some latitude for their improper conduct when engaged in protected concerted activity. Given the board's recognition that disagreements about workplace issues are upsetting and cause strong responses, and that the conduct in question may be inseparable from the protected concerted activity itself. So what are we talking about? We're talking about insubordinate comments toward a supervisor, abusive comments to other employees, and even inappropriate social media posts. So under the new ruling, employers cannot necessarily rely on the fact that they've normally disciplined employees engaging in similar conduct in the absence of any protected concerted activity. And that was the proposition set forth in the General Motors case that was overturned by Lion Elastomers. The employer's motive was what was outcome determinative before, and not whether the employee's behavior was sufficiently egregious. The board will again look at several different factors to determine whether conduct was sufficiently egregious to lose the protection of the NLRA, including such factors as the location and context of the conduct, and whether it was disruptive to the workplace, whether it was threatening or disparaging of the employer's products. Employers should know, though, that the NLRB has previously ruled that some pretty egregious conduct, including profane comments about supervisors or discriminatory comments about employees who didn't want to participate in a strike, for instance, were not sufficiently egregious for employees to lose their protections under the NLRA. And this is particularly worrisome since employers not only have an obligation under labor law, but they have an obligation to provide harassment-free working environments under employment law.
Well, these are certainly complex issues, and unexperienced employers can certainly be caught off guard. Francine, what kind of penalties might be at issue for violations of the NLRA?
So traditionally, when employees were found to have been discharged in violation of the NLRA, the employer would have to reinstate the employee, pay back pay, and post a notice stating that it will not violate the NLRA in the future. After a relatively recent case called Thrive and guidance from the NLRB General Counsel, any economic loss that is a quote-unquote direct and foreseeable result of the employer's illegal act may be awarded. An example of this can be interest on credit card bills made necessary by an employee's discharge and lack of income. So much greater penalties than what had traditionally been available. Further, the board may seek the employer to issue a letter of apology to the discharged employee or require an employer representative to read the notice in front of a group of employees, some actions that employers may not be very willing to take. To make matters even more challenging for employers, in order to settle an unfair labor practice case at the regional office level of the NLRB, an employer would be expected to pay full damages rather than some lesser compromise amount. And so the only alternative would be for the employer to litigate the matter in front of an administrative law judge, and if found in violation of the law, then before the National Labor Relations Board. And again, if it was a negative outcome, the employer would have to appeal to federal court. And clearly all this would be very expensive.
So in light of all of this doom and gloom, Francine, what would you recommend employers do in light of these complex issues under the NLRA?
So there have been so many developments under the NLRA within the last year, including those regarding the legality of handbook provisions and employee agreements and the easier path for unions to organize workplaces, just to name a few. Whether union or non-union, my recommendation is that all employers should provide training to their management employees so that they understand and can avoid the potential pitfalls they may face under labor law, just like the training they receive under employment laws. Employers should also confer with experienced labor counsel to ensure that they are complying with the ever-changing interpretations of the NLRA. And it's hard to keep up with it all. Employers can obtain further information on NLRA developments from other ELA labor podcasts, as well as an article recently published by my firm, which can also be found with the description of this podcast and on the ELA website.
Well, Francine, this has been a fascinating discussion, and the NLRB continues to keep employers on their toes, and we appreciate you walking us through all of these difficult and convoluted issues. Thanks you so much for your time.
You're very welcome. Thank you, Tara.
And thank you, listeners, for tuning in. If you'd like to connect with Francine, please click on her bio in the description of this podcast. We also encourage you to reach out to any of our lawyers around the world by selecting Find a Lawyer on the ELA website at ela.law. In addition, you can search the ELA website where you can sign up to receive invitations to our upcoming webinars, download white papers and on-demand content from our online library, or access the ELA's exclusive Global Employer Handbook. You've been listening to Employment Matters, a podcast brought to you by the Employment Law Alliance, the world's largest network of labor and employment lawyers from the best law firms around the globe. I'm Tara Stingley, and thanks so much for listening.